Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Thursday, it's the Luke and Pete Show. We're talking batteries, we're talking boys, we're talking bread.
Are we?
That's how I'm introducing the show this week. I don't know, I don't know, it's not on the list, but we may turn our attention to someone who has been or continues to be a boy, and bread is the food of life.
What's your,
you know, we might touch on it.
What is your favourite type of bread? If you go to the supermarket and you buy a loaf of bread, what do you normally go for? Because I'll tell you right away, straight away now, I'll go for Hovis Seed Sensations.
Now, that is Sarah's favourite bread. And you can tell we're recording this after the Euro final. We're like, bread. Should we talk about bread? But yes, bread, the seed sensation she's very into. I am personally someone who doesn't eat a lot of bread, so I don't really care. I'll get what she wants, to be quite frank. I'll have, if I see a very specific kind of cheese bagel, like four cheese bagel, I'll go for that, but
I'm
not a big bread guy.
You won't have a loaf of bread on the go as a matter of course in the house because in case you want to make a sandwich or have some toast or something?
When I lived alone, never had bread in the house. Never. It's just not something that... I had a lot of noodles.
But when you lived on your own, you would only really eat noodles and takeaway?
Yeah, pretty much.
And how have you changed that since you started cohabiting? How has that changed?
My partner just cooks a lot of potatoes. I don't eat quite as many noodles, quite as much rice. It's been replaced by potatoes. And let me tell you, that does. There is a cost to that when it comes to your belly.
Right, so you basically your home life then at meal times consists of your lovely lady partner who you have access to cooking a nice meal and thinking I'll just chuck Pete a potato. Are you like one of the dogs? Like you just sat there. Give Pete a potato. He'll have a potato.
Yeah, she's got one of those. She's got one of those. You know those. You just never see them anywhere else. But you see those potato ovens in cafes.
Yeah,
and that all they do is do baked potatoes. Or they display baked potatoes. I keep them warm. The baked potatoes. I'm not really sure why they exist.
They always look the same, don't they?
Why? They always look the same, and they look like nice potatoes, and like the skin's very, very, very dark. But I just don't know. It just has limited use as that thing.
Yeah.
How many baked potatoes are you selling? Baked potatoes are so is a meal. A staple that is so not in vogue at the moment, and I don't think it's ever going to get back to where it was, to be quite frank.
A lot of those purpose-built baked potato ovens, I think, I get the impression that the new generation have essentially eschewed those in favour of the home pizza oven.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. The ones, those silver ones you see in the garden. I just look at that, and it sort of puts in mind a yoghurt maker my dad bought when we were when I was like five.
Right.
Everyone was talking about how many different yogurts we're going to make, how exciting it's going to be, the range of yogurts we were going to create our own. We used it like twice,
yeah.
And then it just went in the cupboard. And every time you'd open the cupboard, you go, "There's a fucking yogurt maker again." And those pizza ovens kind of put me mind to that. I just can't see. If you've got a pizza oven at home, do you use it regularly? Or if you sort of email in at hello@lukeandpizza.com or @lukeandpizza on Twitter, are you just saying that because you're upset at how much it cost?
Yeah, I also feel like the yogurt maker is very niche. I mean, I understand the pizza oven. People come over. It's quite fun to make pizzas. You've got a kid in the family. They want to make pizzas with you. That's a thing. It'll taste really nice because it'll be cooked in that traditional way. And it's in the garden, generally speaking, so it's not taking that much space. I get all that. A yogurt maker is very niche. It's the first I've ever even heard of it. I didn't even know you could buy them. How does it work? I thought yogurt was just essentially fermented or kind of some weird state of dairy. So it's not like an ice cream maker.
Yeah, I don't really know
too
much. I think it was just like a little mini refrigerator, I want to say. But I remember like you had limited pots. You could make four pots at a time in a line. And
But do you know how it actually
more than
works?
Twice. No, I don't know how to make yogurt. I mean, I presume is yogurt just not like temperature controlled milk, old milk. I don't really know, what separates rancid milk with yogurt and the stuff like that. Same with cheese.
There's a whole array and range of dairy products that are essentially mouldy dairy that I don't feel I've got my head around. Like cheese is obviously
if I was like sent back to olden times and I was going to introduce the people to cheese, I wouldn't know how to make it. I'd kill generations of people. I'd kill entire villages because I don't know how to control it properly.
Mate, they ain't putting you near any of their livestock in medieval times. No way. Yeah, but I think people fully underappreciate how important the livestock was to a medieval community. They're not putting anyone but the most trusted people near the animals. And I'm sorry to tell you, mate, but you are not one of them. You'd probably be doing the joinery, mate. You'd probably be putting the old wooden huts up.
I'd be making the a friend of the show, Murray, sent over the dorodango, a Japanese art form in which earth and water are moulded, carefully polished to create a delicate, shiny sphere resembling a billiard ball. Basically, you get a handful of soil, a handful of dirt, or even a handful of poop, mix it with water, just keep squeezing the water out of it over and over again, put it in a carrier bag, make it sweat,
right.
So all of the fluid is out of it, and it just becomes this very soft, malleable kind of rock. It sort of reminds me of that a little bit, just like a soil-based yogurt maker. And then you just start polishing it slowly. And it's kind of this idea of, you can polish a turd. You can, like, dorodango. It's worth a
What's
Google.
The point
These
of it,
shiny bowling. Well, just you're creating something out of nothing. It's very, it's a very calm, kind of meditative discipline. Just shining a ball of soil.
Yeah.
A ball of dirt. I can see why people get off on it.
Would you be doing that?
Dorodango.
Are you doing that in a medieval village? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm doing. I'm the guy who gets rid of the poop from the latrines, and I create little balls of poop.
I mean, because presumably, in that kind of, I mean, we've obviously been very vague with our eras here for no other reason than the fact that we know what we're talking about. But would you be a warrior? Would you? I mean, everyone's going to be expected to fight, probably. So you're going to be front and centre there.
No, I would. I'd be a blacksmith's assistant, and I'd be feckless and useless, and not a real man. And I'd just be a bit of a worm. I'd be dead by 18. I'd fall in a fire.
I quite like the idea of you as a blacksmith's assistant, actually.
Yeah,
and eventually,
yeah, but not like. I'm sort of thinking like a really, is it Podrick out of Game of Thrones? Was he a blacksmith's assistant?
No, Gendry was, wasn't he? Podrick was the man-at-arms kind of thing. But they look quite similar, though. Yeah, Gendry was the black. But you've got to be tough. You've got to have big muscles to be a blacksmith.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's why I'd buy the assistant. I'd just be carrying swords over to the big man while he wax away.
And by 40, which we both are now, we'd both be dead. Right, because people die way before that back then.
Asthma, mate. Asthma.
Oh, yeah, asthma.
I wouldn't have got out of, like, childhood.
I don't think I'd be able to do anything. I can see you as a blacksmith. You're quite good with your hands. You're interested in that kind of tech. And back then, I guess that was tech. And you can do stuff practically. I can't do anything practically. And I'm not brave and I'm not strong. So I think I'm not clever. So I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be able to be a man of letters. I know what I'd end up doing. I'd end up being one of those terrible people back in medieval times who'd have to dress like a woman to avoid going to war, or be the assistant of someone who runs a brothel or something.
Back in the day though, like, everyone was a bit shorter, weren't they? So you'd be regarded as a giant.
I'd be Hodor,
you'd be like a wrestler or something. You'd be Hodor. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But even Hodor's brave. Yeah. Hodor plays a seismic role with his strength and his bravery. By the way, changing trains. I was going to say, I saw that you put in the...
No trains in Game of Thrones.
No,
mate.
It's true.
No trains.
They haven't been invented.
No.
I saw that you put in our little shared doc, and this piqued my interest because it's one of my favourite video games of all time. A copy of Super Mario 64 has sold for $1.5 million. That's right, isn't it? And is that because it's never been opened? Is that the only reason?
Never been opened. I think it's got a really high quality rating in its condition. It's never been opened. There's only four or five other ones that are identical. What I found interesting about this is, like, I'm used to sort of seeing games on, like, the NES or the Super Nintendo kind of going for this amount of money. But, like, I regard Super Mario 64 as being quite a modern game, if that makes any sense. It's polygonal, you know, it's N64. So, yeah, an unopened package of Mario 64, which is incredible, really. You never really know what is going to capture people's imaginations. You never really know which game is going to be the rarity, the one that nobody knew about. And so you do sort of think it's people who have got a lot of storage space, usually in America, people who have got, like, access to barns that they can keep their shit in, are the ones who are going to capitalise on this sort of thing. But you do obviously have to wait 30 years before it's important.
25 years ago, it came out in 1996. I remember it. I remember playing it. And thinking, fucking, this is blowing my mind to bits. Because, as far as I remember, it's one of the first games to be properly 3D, right?
Yeah, certainly on the Mario side.
Does it still stand up now, Pete? Because I remember playing a bit of GoldenEye about, I don't know, a month or so ago, and it was poor.
Mm. No, yeah, I think GoldenEye doesn't. Mario 64, I think very much does. I'd never really played it on the original architecture. I played it on the PC about 10 years ago. But, yeah, I just sort of think, have I got any valuables? And then I look around my unlovable little grief hole and sort of go, no, I don't think I do have any valuables.
It's all your valuables are in the garage, aren't they?
Exactly, they're all in the garage.
Mimi's got Super Mario 64 on the Switch. It's been released on the Switch now, so it's quite cool that you can play it in that way, go back over the old...
Well, they released... somebody managed to find... did they reverse engineer it, or did they... They got the source code, basically, which meant that you could make your own Super Mario 64, if that makes sense. You could make it on the PC, so there could be like a native personal computer, PC or Mac or whatever, Linux version of Super Mario 64. So it's completely device independent. There's some really interesting stuff happening in the Nintendo fan spheres, a point that obviously Nintendo find very problematic because they're very litigious, that company.
Are they? Why? Well, for what reason?
They're very protective about their copyrights, as you know, as everyone should be with their copyrights. But they are known to be incredibly aggressive when it comes to chasing people who are, you know, there's a guy who got sued, I think, for editing a Zelda save file so that you could have more items and stuff, so you could get like more amazing items earlier. And all he was doing was editing the save files with like a hack and then selling them to people. It's obviously the selling that's problematic, because Nintendo should be making the money by rights in that. But yeah, it's a They are very, very aggressive.
What does that mean for those of us that run travelling fun fairs with the hastily painted characters on the side of, say, a roller coaster?
Well, look, it's very much... It depends on how big it is. If you've got a little Super Mario or a Kirby on the side of your waltzers, how big is it compared to the terrible airbrush painting of Angelina Jolie from Tomb Raider? Like, how... like, because it's always those characters, isn't it? It's always... And then they'll be... And a lot of them have got more sexual over time.
Yeah.
I think, like, the Ibiza Uncovered, the no-nonsense kind of, like, you know, the sort of... Jackass-style, sexy kind of suicide girls kind of nonsense. Like, sort of around about the turn of the millennium, everyone got very, you know, everything got hypersexualized, and the paintings on the side of waltzers and stuff, big dippers, quite offensive.
I think you could do a pretty good job of painting the side of waltzers. You're quite good with the old paintbrush. I could see that as your job. You look a bit like you could do that. Like, I could see you with a vest on. Like early in the morning, sort of like doing roll up out your mouth, painting, you know, painting Dizzy on the side of a waltz.
Sooty and sweet, fucking.
It should be Dizzy, right? Because waltzers make you dizzy. Why are they putting Kirby on there?
True.
Put Dizzy Egg on there.
Good point. Dizzy Egg, the Oliver twins.
Yeah. It's always either those kind of video game characters on those travelling funfair rides or really poor renditions of Disney characters.
Yeah, or Tom Cruise, or like, or
Arnie as Terminator.
They never look. Arnie is
a big one, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a big one.
I went down. I didn't realise, but I'm like seconds away from Southend Pier. I mean, you know, I live next to Southend, and I'd never actually been down to the arcades on Southend Pier. Fucking brilliant! It was so popped in for an hour. Played a bit of Outrun. Played a bit of Mario. If I'm like, you know, if I fall out with my partner, I'll just sort of go there for a couple of hours and sink some pounds.
Like an Asbo's teenager. If you fall out with your 40 years old, you go to the fun fair. People are going to ask questions, mate. Don't go there on your own.
It looks good, man. It looks good. Well, I can't get up there with my scooter now because the license plate's been nicked.
Is the Outrun one the one where you just stand up with the steering wheel, or is it the one where you sit in the big car?
It was Outrun 2, actually. It was one where you could... there's two steering wheels in one car, which you would not get in a Ferrari Testarossa, let me make that very clear. But when one person crashes, the other steering wheel becomes active, and you kind of just swap over every time smash into someone. It's a nice idea.
There was one in Leon Solent Amusement Arcade, obviously near where I grew up. Mm. You're right.
Sorry.
Spilt
coffee on myself earlier. It was horrible.
You knocked your paintbrushes over. called Shoot the Cup. Now, if anyone's listening to this, get in touch because it's an amazing game called Shoot the Cup. It was almost like, you know, the gun you get in Resident Evil at an arcade. It was like that, but it was stylized this super American, like, firearms training game where you'd hold the gun. Yes. And it would give you a finite amount of bullets, obviously, if we had to reload. And it would give you a lot of different challenges. So one minute you're walking into a room and there's some hostages, some terrorists, you've got to shoot them. Then it'll flip to another game and you've got to shoot the cup off someone's head. And at the end, the final game always used to be shoot the cup, right? And it always used to say, what's your ammo for ammo? Even though no one in America says ammo. It's just so weird. But anyway, it was an amazing game. I've never seen it anywhere else, ever.
Maybe it was like a Japanese thing, with the Japanese arcade cabinets, you sometimes get some absolutely bizarre pronunciation.
There's also a game that was featured in the third, whatever the most recent series, I think it's the third series of Stranger Things, that they're playing in one of the arcades. And it's an amazingly beautifully rendered cartoon game. It looks nothing like anything else. I want to say it's called like Dragon Quest or something.
It's called Dragon's Lair.
Right, and it looks amazing. Why is it so much more advanced than all the other games around in the early 80s?
It first came out on Laserdisc, I believe. There were some home conversions. It was the guy who left Disney to start his own animation company, Don Bluth, who did that, and they did Space Ace as well. I preferred Space Ace than Dragon's Lair. I used to find that very, very compulsive viewing when you used to sit. But it all used to run off Laserdisc, and it was really, you know, obviously graphically...
Very advanced.
Huh. You know, beautifully animated cartoon. But the only problem is it was a bit of a shitty game.
Right, so it was all show and no go, basically.
Yeah, you'd sort of if you wanted to go up a ladder, you'd for some reason you would go, oh well, I've got to press up here at this point, and you had to do it within the 3 seconds that the computer allowed you to do it in 3 seconds. It was really interesting. I played it on the Amiga on like 7 floppy disks.
Yeah, because
something.
The other games look so really basic in comparison.
Yeah, it looked terrible. But yeah, anything, the sort of Laserdisc video games of like the 90s, early 90s, was just, it looked like nothing else. And walking around the arcades, I think that surprised me was like, back in the day, like the arcades was where the best graphics were.
Yeah.
The video games looked better than all of
these
the
massive
rest.
They cabinets,
were incredible.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And walking around now, the processors are a little bit slow, so you're watching something that's actually quite herky-jerky and not very good. So that's kind of sad a little bit. I was a little bit upset. I was like, oh, yeah. This is where the good stuff used to be, and now it's a bit
also,
wonky.
Also, the attraction, and I'm probably maybe just about old enough to remember it, is that the people didn't have home video game consoles that often. And if they did, they were really basic. And so you'd go to an arcade and you'd pay. I can remember going on holiday to the US with my family in like 1992 or something. My dad got made redundant, and then my parents, I think I told you before, my parents inexplicably spent all the money on a holiday to America, right?
Good on them.
She's like mad. Anyway, in the hotel we stayed at, I had this video game arcade, and it was like the best thing ever. You'd get all these quarters, you'd convert your dollar bill into like 4 quarters, and you'd play these games. And it was like astonishingly good. There was like a wrestling game, which was a 4-player game, and it was nothing like anything I'd ever seen before. But now you're right. I mean, everyone's got these. I mean, like, if you play. You play some of these games on PS5 and stuff, it's absolutely unbelievable how good they are. You're never going to be able to replicate that arcade because probably they can't put the same... They can't afford to have a cabinet that's just one game because, you know, obviously the whole point of a PS5, for example, or a console is it plays loads of different games, right?
Yeah, I mean, they'll have, like, you know, PCs and arcade cabinets that run pretty much the same way that PCs do, which would cut down on how much that's going to cost, I suppose. But the arcades are dying, man. Like, I mean, they've been dying, obviously, for a very, very, very long time. But certainly in Japan, a lot of, like, the straight-up arcades, rather than the pachinko gambling parlours and the rhythm games and stuff, the only games that have really been played in Japan are the rhythm games.
What's a rhythm game?
So there's no... Well, like a rock band, but more advanced, DDR kind of dancing,
oh, yeah.
Waving your arms around, hitting, and like, you know, the Japanese are very good at that. But I think a lot of the Taito arcades and the Sega arcades in say Akihabara in Tokyo, nobody's going because it was so reliant on foreign visitors, and now they've sort of closed up shop. They're finding it very, very difficult. But I mean, when I went down the arcades down there, £2 to play Outrun, £2 for one life in Outrun.
Steep that.
And I'll say one thing for Japan, like 100 yen, what's that, 75p per go? Not bad.
Much more competitive.
Much better than here.
Pete, yeah. let's have a note, let's have a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do some battery brands and maybe squeeze an email or two in as well, shall we?
Yes, please.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
and receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Thursday, so it's Battery Brands on the Luke and Pete Show. If you've got a battery that you've found in an unlovable piece of Chinese tech, let us know. Hello at lukeandpeteshow.com with a photograph, if you would. And you can also get in touch on Twitter and Instagram at Luke and Pete Show.
Yes, indeed. Stuart Burchett, hello to you. He's been in touch with a PK Cell asking if that's a new player entering the game. It is not, I'm afraid. We've seen quite a few of those.
Sorry about that, mate.
And yep. James E, refers to himself as James E on their social media. He's sent in a Pear Deer Ultra Digital. That's also not a new player. But I'm excited to say that Matthew Slater has given us pause for thought because he sent him, Pete, a Toy State battery. I don't recognise it. I looked at the picture. I think it's new. I am still astonished that after all these years, we are still finding batteries we've never seen before. I think, Matt, Peter, if you agree with me, Matt has successfully entered a new player into the game.
I think he's in there. I think he's in there with Toy State. Very, very enjoyable.
Well done, Matthew Slater. Well done to you.
Keep them coming in.
Emails, hello at lukeandpeteshow.com is the address. Pete, do you want to step up and do one? Because I did one on Monday.
I'll step up. Yeah. I got a message from Stephen, one of my favourite emails of recent weeks, has to be said. Morning, lads. Just listening to your recent episode about your granddad selling bread and getting free cinema tickets. I was born in South Africa because my dad was transferred from Belfast to Johannesburg to look after a factory manufacturing knockoff TVs. My dad clamped down on wastage in the manufacturing process, only to find himself confronted by the foreman wielding a gun. The wastage in question was a long-standing verbal agreement that the workers could take a TV off the line in exchange for not throwing grit in the machines and holding up production. Being from Northern Ireland at the height of the Troubles, my dad was ultimately sympathetic to the situation and reported back to head office saying that the production line was inefficient and losses were to be expected. The foreman did fire the gun into the ceiling, cementing the continuation of the deal.
Oh my goodness
oh
me.
Oh lordy. Yeah, I was born in Johannesburg and 3 months later I got to fly back to London on the flight deck of a British Airways 737. It's a shame I can't remember this. Keep up this inane shit, Stephen. And he also throws in a PS as well, which is very interesting. My granddad fought in World War II in Cairo. He failed his driving test with the army and had to spend 3 months in the glass house because he was asked to move a tank and backed it into a market stand. I later found out that this is true, but he got the 3 months for stealing beer from the officer's mess. Stephen,
what a great
more
email.
Of your stories, please.
Can I hear more from Stephen, please? That's a lot of action packed into one email there. I mean, it's got everything, just really.
A foreman of a factory shooting a gun into a ceiling, threatening to throw grit into the machine. What machine is this?
It's less a negotiation, more economy. I am going to do this as a threat if you don't give me what I want. That's incredible stuff.
Smashing
good for
stuff.
You, Stephen. Fantastic. I've got an email here from, I want to find it. It's from, oh, where is it? It's not left his name, the idiot. Oh, it's Michael. It's Michael. He has left his name, but he's put it in the body of the email, which for those of you who don't present podcasts to a middling level won't know that it's It's quite confusing. Anyway, Michael's been in touch with us. Hi, Luke and Pete. It's Michael here from Miami, Florida. Referring to Thursday's episode last week on one of the, when one of the listeners accidentally ate a poisonous plant. That was a U, wasn't it? A U. Listen, we won't refer to it as the yew tree incident because of what's gone on before in this country, but it was very much a man in trouble to do with a yew tree. Michael says, can I refer you to something I looked up while I was listening to your show? The place is called the Poison Garden in Annick. I think it's pronounced Annick in the north of England.
Northumberland. Beautiful.
On its website, it states that if you visit, you must be very careful not to touch anything. Though, as it also mentions, some visitors actually do pass out from inhaling the toxic smell from some of the plants. And he's attached a brochure here for it. It's called The Poison Garden, and the tagline is, "Do you dare to enter?" Thanks for sending that in, Michael. I'm not really sure what the point of going to this place would be.
I mean, yeah, it's nice to sort of know that they're there, and you can identify them in your old. But it would be a needless risk for me, I think, going to a poison garden where everything's poisonous.
And you're allergic to quite a lot of stuff, aren't you? So
true.
And your asthma might play up. It'd be a bit of a nightmare. Tell you what we'd do.
I'd start eating. I'd absentmindedly start eating something like a giraffe, and I'd just end up killing myself.
Drop you off at the. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll drop you off at the arcade on the way.
Yes,
pick
please.
You up on the way back.
I'll have to talk about that. Get
into some, rather than get into some toxic trouble. I also want to squeeze in this last email from Nate, who's emailed us all the way from Wisconsin, a state in the United States that you've visited, I believe, Peter.
I think
you've been to Milwaukee, have you not?
Mm-hmm. Yep, correct. Milwaukee.
Nate says, "Dear Luke and Pete, starting with the usual stuff, long-time listener, first-time emailer. Don't have a TV remote, but the closest batteries are Sony Stamina Plus, which come from the manufacturer of a lightsaber prop made for full contact sparring." Very serious start to the email. Nate goes on to say, "Getting to the point, I've been working my way through the back catalogue of episodes slowly but surely, and in episode 154 or 155, an email read out by Pete mentioned something about a man who collected hats along the highways, and Pete asked how they end up there. This has probably been answered already, given that I'm well over a year behind, but just in case, I've actually witnessed a hat fly out of someone's window on the highway at speed and almost lost a hat of my own the same way. Sometimes people stop to go back for them, but usually traffic is too busy to safely stop and grab your item back from the road, so that's how they get there. Also, somewhere in that same episode, Pete mentioned chewing on various things as a child, including a fake poo, and I found that relatable, as I tended to destroy the collar of T-shirts as a child by chewing them for hours, and to this day, I have no explanation why. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Nate from Wisconsin." I don't remember you chewing a fake poo, although I'll tell you what, it's very on brand.
No, I think it's like chewing bitumen. I think we were talking about that, weren't we? But yeah, I will chew anything. I will chew anything. But it's good to know that there are other people out there who are... collars of T-shirts. Oh, the idea of chewing cotton. Oh, I just absolutely put my teeth on
it. But I think Nate should be fully aware of the fact that he is talking to a man in you, Pete, who has tried every different type of your pet dog's food voluntarily.
Just want to know what's going on, mate. In the words of one of the characters from Red Dwarf, "Now I know why dogs lick their balls, because it takes away from the flavour of the dog food."
I think, Pete, you were very much... Some people have adopted the darkness. You very much were born in it.
The dogness.
Let's get out of here. Thank you very much for listening to the Luke and Pete Show again for another week. It's been great. We will, of course, be back on Monday. If you have an email for us, please do get in touch and let us know by emailing hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. We will read out our favourites as we do every episode. At Luke and Pete Show is our destination on Twitter and Instagram as well. All that's left for me to say is thank you very much indeed, Pete Donaldson, and thank you very much to you listeners. See you again soon.
Luke and Pete Show is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership.
Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.